Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello and welcome to the ID the Future podcast. This is Casey Luskin broadcasting from Discovery Institute, Center for Science and Culture in Seattle, Washington. And I'm using my brand new Skype headset today that I got for Christmas. And I have on the phone with me Dr. Lumen Wing, who is a PhD in biochemistry from Aberdeen University in Scotland. Is that right, Dr. Wing?
Yeah, Scotland. That's right.
Okay. Dr. Wing has worked for about 15 years in biotechnology. He has taught biology at a number of different schools, and he right now is a consultant in biotechnology and is just a real supporter of intelligent design and has some very interesting stories himself. He's also a designer of Discovery Institute's Scientific Descent from Darwinism list. It's really great to have you on the show with us today, Dr. Wing.
Well, it's great to be here. Thanks, Casey.
Dr. Wing, I want to first start off talking about your background, your educational background. And I know that you have some very interesting stories that I think our listeners will be very curious to learn about. So why don't you tell us about where did you go to school and what did you study?
Well, I did my bachelor's degree at San Francisco State University, and it was in 1977 to 1980 in which I attended the biology department and completed my degree there under Dean Kenyon, who was the department chair at the time. And interestingly, just on that note, Dean Kenyon was the department chair and also was teaching a course in the origin of life, a course that I was very interested in. And the textbook that he used for that course was Biochemical Predestination, a textbook that he had written. And it was interesting, at the beginning of the course, this was in 1978, he retracted that text and claimed that it was no longer going to be used in his courses any longer because he simply could not accept his own theory on the concepts of biochemical evolution.
Now, what was it like in the department at that time to have the chair of the department retracting his book arguing for the natural chemical origin of life? What was it like being in the department at that time?
Well, I was also taking a course in comparative anatomy, genetics, and organic chemistry. And in each one of those classes, the word had gone out that this retraction of Dr. Kenyon's text had occurred. And so I was simply curious. I talked to my genetics professor, and I asked him what really was going on here. I was fascinated with it, and I certainly wasn't arguing. And his only comment was that Dr. Kenyon is really under surveillance, and there are certainly questions about his tenure. Now, I was convinced that he was a tenured professor. I didn't really know what he meant. And I asked him, I thought he was a tenured professor, and he said, well, his duration or his stay within this university is being questioned with the retraction of this theory.
So yeah. What was the message that was sent to you as an undergraduate when you heard something like that?
Well, actually, that's exactly what I did. As I talked to my professor in comparative anatomy, and I asked him specifically, what does this actually mean as far as some of the concepts we're learning in his course, comparative anatomy being the study of evolution in and of itself. And he took me into his office and closed the door and proceeded to tell me that regardless how theoretical evolution is and the way it may seem as he lectures, it is dogma in this class and we are to not bring it up any longer. And if I don't answer the exam questions the way he has dictated them, i.e. don't allow any critical thinking is really what was implied, then I would simply have a very low grade. And he even threatened me with an F.
So how did you feel as a student who had your own skepticism of Darwinism at that point? I mean, did you feel threatened? Did you feel intimidated? What did you feel?
I felt very intimidated. I felt intimidated. I had no support, no student support. I was really out there by myself. There was no other students I had any camaraderie with, except for the organizations, you know, that were on the campus that were, you know, certainly just the religious groups, but nothing in the science department. And so it simply drove me to seek this privately. I went and talked to Dean Kenyon personally. He was very encouraging and certainly wasn't very forthcoming about any sort of, you know, solution to it. He just presented it in a factual way and stated to me that there was simply no way that his theory held any water any longer. And he really left it at that at this point. It was very new to him. And I think he was still sort of, you know, writing this moment that in which he presented this to our class the very first time. And so I know that he was under a lot of pressure, and I didn't want to push it any farther, but I certainly was baffled by the response from this department. Absolutely.
So what ended up happening to Dr. Kenyon after he retracted this book?
Well, over a period of 3 years, approximately, his role had diminished, and to this day, he's a professor emeritus, and he simply teaches laboratory courses for general biology, and he has very little visibility within the department. So unfortunately, his statement, although it was under his tenure, he simply lost credibility within the department.
Wow, that's really amazing, Dr. Wing. And it all just started because he stood up and questioned the naturalistic account of the origin of life, basically.
Exactly. That's exactly what he did. And he really did it scientifically. It wasn't something that was done with a hysterical, sort of a philosophical precedent whatsoever. He simply looked at his text, which was beautifully drafted from a perspective of an evolutionist perspective, if you will. And he noticed that there's no way a peptide bond could have any formation whatsoever without a prior existing enzyme. It didn't make sense to be able to form a peptide bond without an enzyme. It could never have happened chaotically. And because of that, it was the major reason why he retracted the whole process, because it was all dependent on enzyme activated catalysis that would allow amino acid formation or bond formation for a peptide bond.
So what you're saying is basically it was kind of like a chicken and egg problem that Dean Kenyon recognized, that you can't have just DNA or just enzyme. You have to have this whole system all at once, and there's no way that a system like that could form in a naturalistic context. Is that the basic idea that was what troubled him?
That's exactly what troubled him. And it's interesting, it was really within the context of this whole chicken and egg process that we have, and we talk about it in later discussions, but it's the whole concepts of where we have the new science called systems biology, which really has its roots in this whole idea of emergent properties, which I find a fascinating concept, because it really is the definition of intelligent design. And he was defining it by the mere statement that you need an entire system in place of emergent properties in order to make a system. So
in your view, Dr. Wing, I mean, is there academic freedom for scientists to question the prevailing wisdom when it comes to the origin and evolution of life?
You know what? I find that a fascinating question, Casey, because honestly, to question it directly, no, you don't. But indirectly and looking at the system itself, yes, you do. Because I believe that if you look at it from the terminology that's currently being made available, that if we use the creativity, yes, it's possible to question it and actually use, as we're going to be discussing the idea of systems biology, one is capable of doing it. But to do it directly, no, there isn't.
Now, you went on to get a PhD in biochemistry, is that right?
That's right.
And what was your experience getting your PhD? Do you feel like, you know, there was people who were free to question evolution, or do you feel like, again, there was a stigma attached to that?
Absolutely a stigma. It's an underlying philosophy, and it's certainly something that it was almost mandatory to add that concept into a thesis. Mercifully, in the thesis that I had written on, I wrote it on blood coagulation and fibrinolysis and certain enzymatic processes and so on, there was no implication whatsoever of evolution, and it was certainly a paragraph that was wanting to be added from my supervisors, and mercifully, I'm the one that said, no, it wasn't necessary. It certainly didn't add to the concept at all. And it really made them question whether it was ever really needed, because it is always added as a philosophical basis of why the science is even there in the first place. Yeah. And hence, you know, I think if more scientists that do question evolution even delete the paragraph, if you will, it doesn't alter the story at all, and it certainly doesn't alter what your finding is. It's simply a philosophical underpinning that is unnecessary.
So why don't you tell us a little about your PhD? What exactly did you study for your PhD?
I studied the plasminogen activator inhibitor, which is an inhibitor of TPA, an enzyme that has been made into a biopharmaceutical that is used for lysing blood clots. And the regulatory mechanism of how this enzyme works is the study I used for my PhD, and also the pharmacokinetics and the toxicology of TPA when dosed at very high doses for treating myocardial infarction, which is heart attacks. And hence, I studied it from a molecular perspective and also a systems perspective by looking at isolated rat liver perfusion to see how this enzyme is cleared and also how it functions inside of a living system. So I kind of looked at a very small, the minutia of the function of this enzyme, and I also looked at the system function. And so it really was a design perspective, which was kind of an early evaluation of systems biology, 20 years ago.
Well, I know, Dr. Wing, systems biology is one of your favorite topics, and we're going to definitely get to that further in some of the upcoming podcasts. But I think we're running out of time for this one. So thank you very much, and stay tuned for more with Dr. Lumen Wing here on the ID of the Future podcast. Thanks for listening.
Music on ID of the Future comes courtesy of composer Yuri Mamchur. Visit www.yuriproductions.com and check out his latest CD, In the Harbor. This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Discovery President is Bruce Chapman. ID the Future Managing Editor is Robert Crowther. And the producer is Keith Pennant. ID the Future and ID Science in the News is copyright Discovery Institute 2006. For more information, visit www.discovery.org or www.idthefuture.com.